sense. So I wanted to just kind of tee this up. We've had multiple interviews with James Lawrence with EV Labs, and we've had really good conversations with him about where they are in the market, the industry, a little bit about their company, Box Trucks, and just what they focus on with these electric powered vehicles. I want to welcome you into the studio, James. I appreciate you for joining us today.
Good morning.
We have quite a bit to unpack, and we actually played the bottom of the hour news first so that we can make sure we had adequate time with you for this interview. So we appreciate you being on.
Thank you.
A little bit of background on EV Labs. EV Labs is a Utah-based electric truck and bus builder. I would also say repower, right? You repower buses.
That's correct.
And you specialize in trucks between 19,005 gross vehicle weight through 33,000 gross vehicle weight. So these are those lighter box trucks, not the big 18-wheelers we're talking about.
That's right. For the moment, what we're focused on is that middle weight. Some people refer to those as medium duty. Yeah. Even though at 33 GVW, it's kind of getting close to heavy duty.
Now, there's a need for it here in the Uinta Basin. Of course, the biggest concern is the non-attainment, right, with the ozone and the carbon emissions and everything that's going on in the basin. Of course, we're in no short supply of carbon emissions here in the basin with the oil and gas industry and wells and things like that. So obviously, as the technology improves and things like that at the well sites, it'll help reduce that. And they've done a phenomenal job at the well sites doing that. But what you're looking to do is to provide, because everybody thinks that electronic is there because it's the big, you know, electric's going to replace gas. And while that may be possible 100 years from now, the technology just doesn't exist today. And even Elon Musk has came about that as well. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, absolutely. I know a lot of people, when I tell them that, especially if they're in the oil and gas industry, now that I live here, I got to be honest, sometimes I've had a few people roll their eyes a little bit. But you know, I tell people all the time, if you did away with the diesel engine and a lot of other engines, people would starve to death. It's that serious. And so really, you know, how they say like politics is local, environment is local too.
It is.
So a lot of times, you know, like, you know, as a kid, I went into Los Angeles and I saw what smog looks like, you know, and I said, wow, this is not what I expected in sunny Southern California. And of course, this was back before they made a lot of changes. And same to a lesser extent, same is true here in the Wasatch Front and here in the basin, you know, because the weather is basically trapped sometimes by the mountains.
Yep.
Then you need some kind of, you really need to think seriously about local, what you do locally as far as emissions. Like you were mentioning with the oil and gas industry, they're really having to focus on that. So in the same way, right now the technology is set up to mainly support, it's practical for those people that are running a 100-mile radius. So obviously that's local. So you're not going to be able to maybe solve all the world's environmental woes, but you're going to be able to handle the local ones so there's better air quality as you're able to get these more electric, where it makes sense.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make sense everywhere. Over-the-road trucks, man, I don't see that being replaced for a long time.
Elon's trying. He's trying with his electric semis.
He's trying, and
but it's an enormous amount of power and electricity to do something like that.
It is, and there's which we hope that we're on the leading edge of that. There's a need for better technology as far as the batteries are concerned.
Well, that was the question I had about batteries, because we saw in Florida right after the hurricane, you had a bunch of electric cars, right? These Teslas that were lying around, and the batteries exploded.
That's right.
And caused the vehicles to burn down. And so there's concerns over the technology, maybe housing, how you protect those batteries. Obviously, you got to get the heat off of the battery too, right? So there's a lot of different things. When you're designing a battery, how is it different from, say, some of the other battery technologies that are out there?
Well,
don't share any trade secrets here, you know, just in general.
What I can say, I can't say this for the coming few months, but I can say it in the coming years for certain. Our battery technology will be, first of all, to be American made, 100% American made.
So which no is, cobalt from the mines out.
There's no cobalt. There'll still be lithium involved. Uh-huh. But we're really talking about
U.S. manufacturing of U.S. minerals.
Yes. Everything, excluding maybe the lithium, will be U.S. sourced. Wow. So, and it's also lighter, has typically most iron phosphate lithium batteries have about 2,500 to 3,000 cycles before they reach what some people refer to as lifespan. Technically, it's not lifespan.
But really, it's like your peak, right? Then it starts to go down. Your charge cycle doesn't last as long.
That's right. What happens is you reach 80% of what it was originally. Yeah. Okay, so you have a 20% loss over those 2,500 or 3,000 cycles.
So we're talking about battery optimization over time. Right. You hear Apple talk about this quite regularly where they say we need to re-optimize the iPhone to make sure that it lasts longer. And a lot of people say, well, that's just going to affect my phone and my phone doesn't work the way it used to. That's correct. They're trying to extend the life of your phone by implementing software code that will extend the life of the battery. So you're talking about battery maintenance over time.
Yeah, not just maintenance, but also cost.
Yeah.
We expect these batteries to be a third of what traditional lithium-ion batteries are.
Wow.
In addition to that, we expect them to last a little longer. So instead of maybe 3,000 cycles, 5,000 cycles, we expect them to charge quicker. Right now, if you charge a traditional lithium iron phosphate, which is generally what's used in the commercial business, what happens is you end up, if you fast charge, you reduce those cycles from maybe 3,000 to maybe 2,000.
So you're giving up convenience, right? You're getting convenience, but you're giving up your...
You're paying for it.
Yeah, you're paying for it over time.
You're paying for
it. And especially when you see the cost of the battery. So we look at Elon Musk, the price of his batteries are just astronomical, right? And that's probably has a lot to do with the rare minerals that are in it.
Right.
Do we see the cost of these batteries that you guys are developing? Or do you see the cost going down?
Yeah, absolutely. Over time? Absolutely going down. As I mentioned, that we're not the inventor of the technology that we're talking about, but we should be the manufacturer of that technology. So meaning that they'll produce a couple of the parts, but we'll do final assembly here in the basin and then apply them to our trucks and buses as we move forward. So that is really, when I first got involved with this, truthfully, as a former fleet owner, and you know, fleet owners are our focus, if I went with what existed then, it didn't make sense, honestly. Mm-hmm. But I just had a gut feeling, nothing scientific about that, that this was the way I needed to go. And so sure enough, about 2 years into the project, I started realizing that this was going to come to happen. This would reach what we call internally an economic tipping point, meaning that if you're a local delivery driver or a route driver delivering packages or delivering LTL freight, it's going to make sense in most applications to use electric versus traditional diesel or.
Why is that the economic? Because I know you have your focus on your E is your economic, your environmental, and ergonomic, right?
Right.
So, but what makes this different than a diesel motor or gas motor truck, box truck?
If we're just talking asset, it's operational cost versus asset cost. A few years ago, the asset costs, you could buy three conventional trucks for one electric. Mm-hmm. That's very expensive.
Yeah.
However, especially now with the really high diesel prices, the operational cost is going to be like $3 to $4 a day instead of $50, $60, $70 a day. And so therefore, at that time, you were basically trading high asset costs for low operational costs. The batteries are the big cost driver. You know, most of the time, $200-$300 a kilowatt, depending how they're applied in their chemistry. Mm-hmm. So therefore, you know, you're going to have a lot of, if you can reduce the cost of the batteries, that's where it reaches a tipping point. And the other, there's other smaller factors, some of them not so small. Give you an example. On our Thunderbolt delivery platform, the Thunderbolt, we take 3,000 steps a day out of a route driver's day. And how do we do that? Well, we're doing that because we're able to replace a motor that is about the size of a kitchen table to a motor that's basically a size a little bit bigger than a bread box with the same or more horsepower and torque that you would have. So what that
lighter
means—
Lighter weight as well?
Lighter weight as well. Now, granted, some of that's offset with the batteries. You know, you have typically, give you a few facts here, typically traditional lithium-ion batteries are around 10 pounds per kilowatt. The batteries we're talking about are 5 pounds per kilowatt, so reduce the weight, cut the weight in half.
Mm-hmm. So do we? So when you look at the weight, right? Weight's a big thing because obviously you want all the weight to be in what you're hauling, right?
That's right.
And then of course that you need the torque to be able to get through town and stuff like that. Do we see torque sufficiencies as far as the Nooch Box trucks that are coming out, the electric ones that you guys are producing? Is the torque sufficient to meet the demand?
Oh, more than sufficient. In most cases. There's two things you're going to notice about an electric truck. One thing is it's going to accelerate pretty good, okay? Not so good that it burns out the rear wheels or anything, but but good enough that it's you know, a torque curve on a traditional diesel or gas motor is a ramp. You know, it starts down kind of low and just ramps up and peaks maybe around 2,000, 2,200 RPM. Our torque level, I'm not exaggerating here, our maximum torque level starts at 3 RPM, 2 or 3 RPM.
Whoa.
So you got maximum torque.
Right
out of the gate. And the other thing that we're doing differently is we're attaching, unlike our competitors, we're actually attaching our electric motor to a transmission. So means that, you know, a transmission is a torque multiplier.
Yeah.
So what that means is it's got really great acceleration. I'll give you an example. A 19.5 truck fully loaded is going to go from 0 to 55 right around 10 seconds, 10 to 11 seconds. So that's pretty fast. And I took one of my customers' diesel buses, and I know people wonder, what is that dude driving the diesel bus for? But I took it out and did a stopwatch to see what the acceleration was. And I'm not exaggerating. Now, granted, this one had about 25, 30,000 miles on it. It wasn't old, but it wasn't new either. But it was 55 seconds from 0 to 55 or 0 to 60.
Yeah.
And
what's your 0 to 60?
Like I said, about 11 seconds.
Man, that's
11,
so quick.
12 seconds, yeah. So it'd be pretty quick. But the other thing is, you know, going back to what you were talking about with it is, you know, the three things we look at is ergonomic, economic, and electric, first of all, ergonomic and economic. Mm-hmm. So going back to the ergonomic part, the reason we're able to take those steps I was telling you out of the day is because there's one step into the vehicle and one step out. Plus, there's a few other little tricks that we've done.
We say steps, physical steps to get into the vehicle.
Yeah, you know, a step van is very aptly named because there's like three or four steps to get in it.
Yeah, a lot of these guys that are delivering box trucks, like your FedEx, your UPS drivers, you know, any of those drivers, right? The amount of steps they take per day is pretty extensive.
It is.
That's in the truck. Once they get out of the truck, they still got to go to the front door. So what are you guys doing to help with that?
Well, just having the one step in, it's literally a flat four from the driver compartment all the way to the back end of the truck. So
Because you're losing some of the gas components?
Because the main thing is we've completely rethought everything. And this specifically doesn't apply to the box truck, but it does apply to the Thunderbolt chassis, which is also a chassis for transit, for like local transit. Mm-hmm. So it's really the same chassis, just different body. But what we've really done by having that one step in and having a smaller motor, we've integrated the batteries into the frame. So the frame is basically built around the battery. So it's not an add-on, it's part of the frame.
Wait, so it's like one of those flashlights where you just drop the batteries in and just when they're done, you replace them kind of thing?
It's similar to that, yeah,
but
it is.
But now it's rechargeable batteries inside of it.
That's right, and it's also serviceable. It's serviceable because you can remove them from the sides, from either sides.
Uh-huh.
We can carry upwards of over 300 kilowatts. As a general rule, our vehicles consume about 1.3 kilowatts per mile.
What about so the biggest thing on batteries is like when you talk about these cobalts, right? The mines, right? That they have the material that comes out of the cobalt mines and they produce these batteries. But then, you know, are they easily recyclable? How does that rate your ability to recycle the battery materials that you have from yours compared to one that has, you know, some of these older battery technologies?
Well, that's a huge problem right now because as these batteries get to their lifespan, now they can be put into like backup power for homes and businesses. You know, you can do that sort of thing. But to recycle them, truly recycle them, and remove the cobalt and the lithium.
Take them down to the mineral level.
Take them down to the mineral level is quite a challenge. And on top of that, depending on how it's designed, you know, some of the batteries that are out there are cylindrical. So they're basically like really large D batteries, okay?
Yeah.
And then they're put into that. Now, our particular application, we don't use batteries like that, at least for the moment we don't. Uh-huh. Most of our batteries are in like a pouch system, and they sit inside of a module. Most of our modules are between 35 and 70 kilowatts of capacity. So, that's generally how they work.
So, I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the expectations coming up right now, where you guys are. When we first started this, and you guys made the announcement that you were going to have your facilities here in Vernal, there's been a lot since then that's taken place. Where are we at on the development of your trucks, and can you kind of give the stages?
Absolutely. Well, like everyone, we've dealt with the supply chain issues. And some of them from really weird spots that, Mike, I would never in a million years think we would have trouble getting windshield glass for our vehicles. Now, glass is custom on this box truck, but that's as an example. But we have right now 10 cab and chassis coming out of paint right now. And all of our, most all of our electronics, motors, and controllers are currently in inventory. Mm-hmm. So they've been sitting there for a while waiting for our chassis parts to arrive. With that said, you'll be seeing around town here in Vernal and other places, you'll be seeing a truck the first of the year being tested out on the road. And probably be yours truly and a couple of my engineers out there tag teaming it. So
you gotta field test it, right?
Yeah. So that's kind of it's kind of where we're at right now. We've been interviewing a lot of folks, and with that said, I'd kind of like to say that if any of you have put in applications or whatever, a lot of you I've talked to, maybe some of you I haven't, but we're still doing interviews for engineers, welders, and fabricators, and hopeful to be able to ramp up our hiring as we get into the end and beginning of next year.
If somebody wants to send their CV out, where do they email that to?
I think probably the best way to do is info@evlaboratory.com.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
So obviously jobs, what kind of, like initially, what kind of hiring are we looking at? How many jobs for these type of positions?
Some of that is kind of a work in progress because
you're still ramping.
We're still ramping, but here's the exciting thing. And this kind of relates to what we're going to talk about a little bit with the school district here in a little bit. But there's school districts all over the Fruited Plain, as they say, that's received nearly $1 billion in totality in monies from the EPA to be able to build electric school buses. And so, therefore, we're sending out hundreds right now as we speak. We're sending out hundreds of proposals for that.
This would be nationwide, of course.
Yeah, it would be nationwide.
And when we get back, just I don't want to cut you off real quick, but when we get back from break, we're going to be talking about the recent announcement with Yuna County winning an award for funds to purchase electric buses and what that means, because there's quite a bit to unpack there. We'll talk about that.
Okay.
I'm going to hold you over. We're going to go to a quick commercial break. When we get back, we'll have a conversation about that. We also have an interview that's going to be coming up from Richard Paul, Mike Richard Paul, that Steve Evans did. It's going to be an upcoming book. So we'll be back after a brief commercial break. Welcome back to the show. This is 104.5 FM and AM 920 KVEL, Basin's Talk Leader. Basin Now Live with Mike Stengel. We are back in studio with James Lawrence. He is the owner of EV Labs. Before we go back to our interview, I wanted to thank one of our sponsors here at the show. We appreciate all of our sponsors for their time and their effort that they do to make the show possible. Intercap Lending, if you're looking to refinance or to purchase your first home or, heck, get yourself a second home, reach out to Kim or Betty. Go down to their Smith's Marketplace Shopping Center located here in Vernal, so conveniently located. You can go on in. They'll take really good care of you. Look, there's a lot of equity in homes, and you want to take advantage of that before things change in the market, and it's a good time to do that. So reach down and visit with them. We appreciate them again. And Red Rock Pond down in Fort Duchesne. If you're looking for services, pond services, whether they're big or small, stop in and visit with Red Rock Pond. And again, they're down in Fort Duchesne. It's really hard not to see him when you drive by. So you're going to see him. So, James, I was playing the song, coming back in Winds of Change. It's interesting how the market has changed, right? With the electric vehicles, introductions of electric vehicle technology, it's really gotten better over time, right? Those kind of things have to eventually evolve. They have to catch up with what the needs are at the time, at where we are now.
That's right. And that's a pretty good lead in. I'm sure you did that on purpose.
But. It was intentional.
But yeah, there are changes, but there's been just a lot of improvement, and there's still a lot of improvement to do. I feel like a lot of our competition have focused on just the electric part, but missed the totality of what electric can do as it relates to some of these other factors we're talking about. So that's why we're focused. We just don't do anything if it doesn't reach those goals of being electric, being ergonomic, and being economic.
So recently, we promised we would cover it, and we are. There was a recent announcement that Uinta County School District was awarded. It was a press release. This is coming directly from their press release announcement. It says it was awarded nearly $4 million for electric buses. And this is the charging infrastructure as well. U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has notified the Uinta School District that it has been awarded $3,950,000 through the agency's 2022 Clean School Bus Rebates Program. The funds include $3.75 million to help with the district purchase 10 new electric school buses. So they're not cheap.
No.
And $200,000 for building infrastructure to charge the buses. Uinta School District is one of only two Utah districts to be awarded funding from the EPA. So, and of course, Superintendent Rick Woodford said our decision to apply for this funding was based in part on a letter the district received early this year from the Utah Petroleum Association encouraging us to electrify our fleet school, Uinta School our fleet, and look for other ways to reduce emissions and improve air quality in the Uinta Basin. So it seems like a collaborative approach to let's try to reduce emissions here in the basin. They understand the importance of that. So it seems like the right decision to look for options and funding that's available.
Right.
Obviously, grant money is always important.
And that letter, I need to give a shout out to Thomas Witterton because he was greatly responsible. He, with the Utah Petroleum Association, in producing that letter. And that really helped, I'm certain, the school district make that decision. And it's a win-win for them because it means there's 10 buses they don't have to buy. Now, the old buses have to be decommissioned, and there's a very strict process that has to be followed for that. But nevertheless, it'll be recycled, of course. But
And they'll still be using gas buses because right now they've got 36 diesel buses and 27 propane buses. So they're going to be replacing 10. And obviously that's a way to start the process, but also to get the district familiar and used to using electric. And the hope is of obviously, replacing the fleet at some point.
That's right. And so now they had to, they were probably buying 2, 3, 4 buses a year for their particular fleet. So now they don't have to buy those 10 buses because they're basically paid for through this program.
So I wanted to talk a little bit. You got some major changes coming for you guys and an announcement you wanted to make. And I want to give you the opportunity, the time to do that. So I'll just give you the floor.
Yeah, sure. We've just signed a deal with an organization called the Box Truck Network. And that network basically represents about 4,000 fleet owners, representing about 20,000 trucks. They're mainly focused on non-CDL trucks, i.e. box trucks. So
these are your local delivery trucks.
These are your local delivery trucks that are, delivering everything from furniture to parcels to you name it. Pretty much
so
everything.
This by extension gives you access to the box truck network of companies that are purchasing box trucks within this group.
They're basically a trade organization, and that organization is there to support in the same way the American Trucking Associations, ATA.
Yeah.
But it's very specific. It's for non-CDL type trucks. And basically, for those that don't know, that's generally trucks that are less than 26,000 gross vehicle weight. And that's where our box truck is at 26,000. So it's basically a rider, to put it in to picture it, it's basically a rider or Penske truck or smaller.
Okay.
Box truck, that is. And so, so yes, we've been working with them, made an agreement. We're going to be in their trade show in May.
Uh-huh.
And that trade show will roll out our brand new box truck.
You're going to bring it to the show?
Yeah, the show's going to be in Atlanta, Georgia. That's where we're going to roll it out at. We're also planning, I didn't put this on our outline, but we also plan to do a grand opening at EV Labs. Don't have a time to give you, but we're expecting the first quarter of next year to be able to do that grand opening.
I think what you guys are doing for the basin here is changing the views of some people that are from the outside, right? Looking in, saying, well, it's all an oil and gas market. And really what it is there's a lot of really good workers here that want to just provide a better life for their family.
And there's a lot of good, there are a lot of good workers. And there's also a lot of good suppliers.
Yeah.
We've been working with Superior Drilling Products, with Troy and Annette Meyer,
mm-hmm.
and they've just been great to work with. They'll be one of our bigger suppliers here, and we're trying to do everything that's possible to get local suppliers to support our business here.
So if there's a company here that is looking to provide supplies to you, how do they go about doing that? If they want to be considered a vendor,
I'd probably still have them go to info@evlaboratory.com.
Okay,
and just have them send. I get a lot of folks dropping by at the office. You know, some of them are just curious. You know, and some of them are looking for work. Some of them are just potential suppliers. So we welcome everybody. And if they want to come by and talk to us, or if they could first send us an email, it'd be very helpful so we could structure our time.
Yeah, it's probably good to have that information before you start the interview. You guys have quite a bit going on, and you continue to grow. And it's exciting to see that you're going to be rolling out that box truck at the trade show and making those connections that will all connect back here to the basin.
That's right.
And, of course, jobs is very important here to the basin, those individuals that are looking to provide for their families. But more than that, just the commitment that you have made to the basin has been pretty substantial.
It has. And I've got to say, I live here now, okay? Mm-hmm. You mentioned Ian and the storms and the batteries catching on fire. Actually, it was personal to me.
Yeah.
It actually did about $100,000 worth of damage to my home back in South Florida.
Yeah.
So that happened after we left. So I told my wife, I said, well, maybe the good Lord doesn't want us to go back home.
Everybody's trying to get in. You're the only one trying to get out. How has the basin been as far as you and your family moving here? How has it been? Have you guys been well received?
Oh, my goodness, yes.
I can answer the question. I want you to. So,
yeah. It's been terrific.
Good.
There's been so many people. Steve Evans here at Evans Family Media, that just been terrific to me.
Yeah.
And then just everybody, people in church, people in the restaurants. I mean, everywhere we go, people have been just genuinely very kind and very encouraging.
So looking, of course, with the oil markets, we're always watching it here. Just want to give out the information. WTI right now is at $85 a barrel, still a healthy price for here for the basin, so that's a good thing. Do you see the opportunity locally with this design of these trucks where we can have local organizations, companies, for example, the Eunice School District, right, picking up this grant? They could use those funds to purchase your vehicles for your buses, right?
That's right.
How would that process go? Is there just, I'm assuming it's a bidding process. The district would put out a bid process.
Yes.
But what do we do to make sure that those funds that they've been awarded stay local?
Well, we've been in discussions with the folks at the school districts here locally,
mm-hmm.
and we're hopeful and optimistic that they'll give us, well, we'll be bidding on that, of course.
Right.
And we've been meeting with them off and on for the last few months, or actually a year, because one of my very first meetings was with the school board here, just kind of, getting the lay of the land. So we're optimistic we'll be able to participate. And the folks there have said that it would certainly be nice to have a supplier and a manufacturer right next door. So supporting the product would be very easy to do.
Well, I think it's a great, it's a tremendous opportunity for the basin, and seeing the growth that you guys have had as of late has been great. I would encourage those that that want to keep those funds local to reach out to your school board superintendent and the school board itself and encourage them to try to keep the funds local. This helps the basin. These funds can stay here in the basin if it's awarded. Obviously, the school district has to determine that these buses meet their standards and their needs.
Right.
And so there's a process to go through that. But if it's a little bit of encouragement is always a good thing.
So, oh, yeah. Yeah, I think we'll meet all their requirements. I'm confident of that. And I know for a fact that we'll support it better than any of our competitors out east would support it. And that much I can assure you.
Well, I appreciate you spending the time with us, James, coming in today. Any final thoughts you got before we go?
No, just want to say thank you to the basin for being kind to us. And look forward to meeting more of you. And just thank you.
We're going to go ahead, and I appreciate you coming in. Oh, as always, it's nice having you. We're going to go ahead and play an interview, as promised. Mike Richard Paul had an interview, and we're going to go ahead and play that. It's about a 12, 13-minute runtime. Before we go to the break, this is 104.5 FM and AM 920 KVEL, Basin's Talk Leader, Basin Now Live with Mike Stengel, for Vernal, Roosevelt, and Duchesne. And we'll see you guys back next week. Enjoy the interview.